welcome friends, fans, and colleagues to Voices of the Sacred Feminine. I am your hostess, Karen Tate, and I'm so glad to be here with you today on this unusual day for a show. Probably like most of you, life has been shifted and altered a little bit. I'm no exception here. We generally would do the show on Wednesdays, Wednesday morning, actually. I had shifted things to accommodate a lot of our guests who call in from Europe. But as I said, you know, things have changed. We have some tele-rehab happening at our house during the day, during the week. So at least for the month of April and maybe into May, if you've been following the show, you will find that most of you know, my offerings now, most of the interviews, are going to be on a Friday, Saturday, or Sunday for a while. Yeah. And who knows? We may find out that this works better. We'll see. Let me know about that, because when I do have the option to go back to Wednesday, if it looks like it's actually more convenient for people on a Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, we may stick with this. And, you know, I kind of think that's just you know, kind of indicative of how our lives may be moving forward. You know, all of these things that feel like changes, that feel like inconveniences, we may find that they are actually gifts. So, you know, let us most definitely be open to that idea as we, you know, try to be liquid. You know, we try to be fluid and don't resist the change. You know, we kind of go on this ride as an adventure rather than, you know, in white-knuckled fear. Because on the other side of this, things may actually be quite good, even better. I know this might sound crazy to some of you, but I have taken to calling the pandemic out there, pandemia, and I can't help but think that this is all for a reason that is going to help humanity evolve in a positive way. We'll have to wait and see what that looks like. But I almost liken it to the goddess Kali, you know, the goddess of destruction and creation. What needs to be torn down so something new can be rebuilt in its place, something better can be built in its place. So anyway, that's where my head has been lately, and that's not to, you know, be light about the collateral damage of the people that are sick or suffering. I don't mean that by any stretch of the imagination. That is tragic. That is tragic indeed. But you know, we have to stay positive, and you know, I believe you know, that good will come from this. We just have to wait and see what that looks like on the other side. So, thank you for being with me this Sunday. I have a great show for you, a popular topic that I haven't covered for a while now. The topic is Reclaiming Lilith, Reclaiming Ourselves, and I have with me as my guest, Monette Chilson. Let me tell you a little bit about her before we start our interview. She is the author of Original Resistance, Reclaiming Lilith, Reclaiming Ourselves, which is an anthology you might want to try to get your hands on. She's also authored My Name is Lilith and Sophia Rising, Awakening Your Sacred Wisdom Through Yoga. She writes about God and the feminine and the feminine in God. She speaks to groups, big and small, in both lecture and workshop settings. She's written for publications including Yoga Journal, Integral Yoga Magazine, and Elephant Journal, and she's contributed to numerous anthologies, most recently Yoga Wisdom, Warrior Tales, Inspiring You on and Off the Mat, and Whatever Works, Feminists of Faith Speak. She was awarded an Illumination Book Award Gold Medal, as well as the Hoffer Small Press and First Horizon Awards. You can find her on Twitter and Instagram, and her handle is at Monette Chilson, her name, MonetteChilson, or you can go to her website, which is also her name, www.monettechilson.com. So, Monette, welcome to Voices of the Sacred Feminine.
Thank you, Karen.
Well, I'm so glad to have you with me today. You know, I think this is a hot topic always, maybe even more right now. And we're going to get into what lessons we have from Lilith, particularly for today and what we're going through. But, you know, let's just start at the beginning. You know, we often have a lot of new listeners, sometimes maybe even old listeners, you know, that they benefit from new perspectives. So let's start at the beginning with who Lilith is. I know most of us have grown up with the, you know, if we come from a Judeo-Christian background, that, you know, she's a demon, she's a succubus, you know, she didn't want to obey Adam. You know, what's your take on that? Is all of that metaphor, is all of that patriarchy, you know, how do we separate at least what we can glean as truth versus propaganda?
Well, all the work I've done on Lilith is truly a reclaiming of the story in a positive light, kind of like what you see when you see books rewritten that look at the villain and what the villain actually did. We kind of deconstruct Lilith, and the first book I wrote was for children, so it told the story in a very simple way, and really we just looked at who Lilith was, and of course this is a very, very ancient myth, so it's not like you can look at, you know, evidence and facts and writings. It's a lot of lore and stories that were handed down in fables. And the thing about Lilith that I find so interesting is she is not constricted to just one tradition or one region of the world. Really, Lilith or Lilith-like characters emerge all over. But the core, I think the strongest place where we see Lilith is in the Judeo tradition, in the Jewish tradition. And it's just fascinating to me because it's kind of like the real Lilith was hidden right in front of us and we didn't see her. And when I kind of talk to people who don't know who Lilith is and explain that the rabbis, when they looked at Genesis, their job in the Midrashic tradition was to explain the inconsistencies. And they looked at Genesis and they saw that it started with man and woman were created from the earth. And then it goes on, you know, a few verses later to say woman was taken from man's rib. And they had to reconcile those for the people in their synagogues. And what they said was, oh, the first woman was Lilith. She did not submit. She would not sacrifice her full personhood to Adam, so she was sent from the garden. She was banished. And then God had to start over, and the second woman was Eve. And I just think that's such a fascinating, interesting way to explain that. And then when you really look at what little we know of the story, Lilith really didn't do anything that deserved demonization. You know, she just said, no, I have my own self, and I want to do this together like God said at the beginning. That's all she did. But for that, she's demonized.
Well, but think about it. You know, now, you know, we feminists who have the courage to rethink and challenge, and I'm speaking for myself when I say I'm a feminist. I don't know if you claim that label or not, but what better way for male leadership who wants to dominate to create a myth that says to women, You know, it's saying right there what your role is, submission. You know, not equality, but submission. So, you know, here you had the, you know, the sexism, the misogyny, the inequality built into the myth for the benefit of a male-dominated patriarchal society.
Yes. When people ask me, you know, why haven't I heard of Lilith? That's why, because her existence didn't serve what the patriarchy was trying to create at that point. And patriarchy, you know, big word, but really it was men telling the story and men creating the narrative for religions and for culture. And to keep it the way they envisioned it, it didn't work to have women like Lilith. It worked to have women like Eve.
Well, and it makes me think of two separate, you know, kind of a two-pronged response. First, I'm thinking about, you know, Astarte, Inanna, Queen of Heaven, you know, Judeo, you know, the times of the Jews and, you know, Canaanites and, you know, way back then, when the women were baking cakes to the Queen of Heaven, it seems like they had, a little bit of backbone and spine then, because, you know, they were saying to the men, no, we're not going to, you know, stop baking our cakes to the Queen of Heaven. And, you know, Astarte, Inanna, you know, she was, you know, a part of things, you know, at one point until she wasn't anymore. And it makes me also think of the Egyptian goddess Sekhmet, the only written fable, stories, mythology, whatever you want to call it, about her is, you know, this, you know, like she's potentially, you know, she's almost this wanton killer. She's dangerous. She's a mercenary for her father, Ra. And I think whether we're talking Lilith or we're talking, you know, Sekhmet, it feels like to me we're not getting the original story, you know, of who these goddesses were in their most authentic selves. You know, they've been already chipped away at by the patriarchy. You know, with Sekhmet, I think that was the patriarchy saying, you know, to society, well, you can't trust women's power, you know, maybe even to women themselves, you know, you need to be tamed, you need to submit, you can't trust your own power, you know, and I don't know, I guess, you know, we haven't found everything. I mean, look, the Dead Sea Scrolls were found not that long ago. They talk about so much is still hidden under the sands in the Middle East. You know, one day we may find the original stories of who Lilith was to begin with, who Sekhmet was to begin with. I don't know. That's just my thoughts. I just think these stories that we have now that we're working with are distortions. And maybe that's why you feel it's so important to revision her and reclaim her, right?
Absolutely. I think it is such a loss, even to women who don't recognize it as a loss, that there are no stories with strong female archetypes that we can lean into when we need that strength. You know, when you look at the option we've been given of the world's first woman, Eve, when you look at the fact that the myth goes, and this isn't to demonize Eve, because really it's to demonize the way she was portrayed and shamed in that story, that reaching for something that she desired caused the world to fall apart. So what does that tell a little girl who's listening for that to that story when, you know, in those formative years, you reach for what you want and you better be careful because it's all, you're going to topple everything. And that's a scary thought to plant in a, you know, a girl's heart.
Well, and if I can translate that into maybe modern vernacular, if you will, how many mothers have told their daughters, don't be too smart, boys won't like you, don't be too loud, you know, don't be too successful, you know, men, you know, you won't get a husband, kind of a thing. I almost feel like those are maybe modern examples of that myth, yes?
Absolutely. And I think that's why I've been so blessed to be a part of the Girl God Publishing Group. Trista, you've had on many times before, because Trista's whole premise when she started it, her very first book she published was called The Girl God, and it was to begin with little girls, to plant the seed that God is in them too, and they are in God too, and that it is even okay to say goddess. I mean, the book she's done, I just love the pattern she's followed, because she's had someone write a children's book. Like the book I wrote before this was My Name is Lilith. It's a picture book. It's got, you know, a few lines on each page and beautiful illustrations. But it's to start to tell that story so that little girls can start to absorb that truth about themselves and not have to relearn it later. And she's done the same thing with not just religious myths, but one of the first books in that series she did was My Name is Medusa. You know, everyone, prototypical scary woman is Medusa. And she was able to, I forget who wrote that one for her. It wasn't her. But to reclaim that story and that fierceness and to make snakes not so scary, but wise. So I think it's lovely to talk to the little girls first and the children, and then to be able to follow that up like we did with Original Resistance, with an anthology that speaks to women and men about the experiences with Lilith of women from all over the world. Our anthology has, I think, 45 different contributors from all over the world, and it's just so much fun to hear the joy, the anger, the fire, the rage, all the feelings in poetry and prose and art. It was just a joy to edit that.
Yeah, I think it is so important. You know, one of the things that I've talked about a lot, I even gave a talk at the Council for the Parliament of World Religions when it was in Utah that year a while back, about reclaiming our sacred stories and actually giving ourselves permission to rewrite these old patriarchal myths, you know, to put a spin on it that serves women, you know. And some people might say, well, who gives us the right to do that? Well, I mean, the people who wrote the patriarchal myths, the propaganda to prop up men and make women submit, I don't know where there was anybody asking these guys, you know, who gave them permission. I think it's really important that, you know, we claim our own sovereignty and autonomy and say, you know, we're going to rethink this. You know, we're going to rewrite this because this is not the seeds we want to have planted, that, you know, this isn't what we want to sprout out there in the world. I mean, I think about Mary, too, and Eve. You know, in a way, both of these figures from Judeo-Christian myth, you know, it's almost as if they're too nice, you know, look, not that I'm against nice, but they're benign, you know, they're passive. And when I think of Mary, for instance, I think of her as a social justice warrior, because I would imagine if Jesus was real and if Mary was real, Mary was living under the boot of Rome. You know, their boot was on her neck. And if Jesus learned his social justice you know, ideas. It was probably at the knee of Mary. You know, no wonder he comes out and he doesn't discriminate against women, and he's for the poor, and he has all these values that we would recognize as the feminine. But I think she's another one who, you know, got caught up in this, you know, patriarchal web of diminishing the feminine. I mean, look, she can't be sexual. She has to have an immaculate conception, for heaven's sake. It doesn't even get her just due. You know, they won't name her, even though she can birth a god, she is not a goddess. You know, I mean, it's kind of the ultimate short shrift, if you will, you know, but I guess what would you expect in a patriarchal religion?
Right, right. I really think you hit the nail on the head when you were talking about the hesitancy that women have to dare to rewrite these stories. It's like we're waiting for our priest or our rabbi or some man at the pulpit to write us a permission slip. And we need to remember that we don't need a permission slip. God put, you know, God, goddess, the divine, put a knowing and a spark inside of us. And all we have to do, which is really easy to do in this day and age when we, you know, are isolated and locked up, is sit and be still. And we'll know how to interpret the story. We'll know what the myth has for us. We don't have to have someone interpret it for us. And if something doesn't sound true and right to us, then it's not true and right to us, for us. We get to interpret and have the divine speak directly to us.
Well, I'm so glad you said that, because I think it's so important to say, if men can be divinely inspired, so can women, you know, and that sort of takes me back to the anthology again. I wonder for you, Monette, can you remember from all of these wonderful different essays in the anthology, is there maybe one or two things that jumped out at you that was something new or fresh or poignant that you feel like, you know, you maybe want to highlight for listeners?
Oh, gosh, Karen, I just picked it up and I'm starting to flip through it to see what jumps out at me. I guess if I had to say a thread, and they're also very different. I think it's a coming back to oneself, to a part of us that was lost. And the way the different writers approach that, some it's with a, you know, a grief and a sadness, and some it's with really fiery anger, and some are stories that will break your heart about their real lives. And how it played out for them not having that Lilith spirit in them, thinking they didn't have the choice and they needed the permission slip and they had to follow the script. So it's really, the whole book is like going off script. But by going off script, you're going like onto your true script. And it's about women figuring that out in beautiful, joyful, painful, poignant ways.
Monette, let me just say, you know, when you turned to the book, I could tell your voice changed a bit. So you probably moved your face and your mouth and your voice away from the mic. So let's go back to your sort of original position so that I can hear you a little bit clearer. We did get what you said, but I want to just make sure moving forward, you know, your voice sounds as clear as it can be. So let's talk about Lilith. And what lessons do you feel she teaches us, you know, and if we wanted to embody her, what would that look like?
I think she is a role model for how to be true to ourselves and honor our own truth. She reminds us that sacrificing ourselves to appease others is not necessary and not desirable. That's a huge, powerful message that, like you said, when we were kind of going through some of the other Judeo-Christian, you know, women that are revered, you just don't get that. You get that a woman is to be selfless and not to get off topic, but I can't help it. I keep hearing the voice in my head. I just finished Glennon Doyle's new book, Untamed, and she makes a point in there about how just absurd it is that the epitome of femininity is selflessness. So if you want to be the ideal woman, you should have no self. And really, that's what most of the feminine religious paradigm would tell us about being a woman, and that's really sad.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I've interviewed women who have escaped the Quiverful movement, and it's so tragic. I mean, they tell me what their life was like. I mean, they're basically told that their role is to have children, and they're supposed to keep having children till their body breaks, basically. And if they die in childhood, well, they were a martyr for Christ. You know, a lot of them have a slew of kids. You know, they run businesses out of their homes. You know, they don't have a lot of the conveniences in modern life, making life that much harder. It's amazing. You know, it's servitude almost. You know, and I don't know. I get a little angry when I think about the man who would think that's okay.
Yes, I agree, which is why probably we should be preaching this message to men as well as women. I tend to gravitate towards taking it to women because I feel like it's a little bit like putting an oxygen mask on for them, so I feel like they need it first. But everyone needs to know that it's okay. It's more than okay. It's how humans were made to be strong, and regardless of your gender. And men are in boxes too. So, you know, I don't want to say that they haven't had prescribed roles, and it could actually be very freeing to a man to realize that he's actually not responsible for the women in his life. They're responsible for their own damn selves.
Right. Well, and the other thing, too, is, I mean, not only do women need to hear this so that they can become whole and maybe find their authentic self, but I think they also need to hear it if they're mothers with sons or daughters, for that matter, so that they don't perpetuate this, you know, indoctrination of what the man's role is going to be or the woman's role is going to be. And I can imagine how hard that is. You know, I'm trying to remember the title now. I just finished a book that was on the New York Times bestseller list, and it was about a woman who escaped the Mormon church. And it was, I think it was called Uneducated, maybe. I might be wrong. I'll have to think about it. It might come to me. But, you know, you could see how everyone sort of gets trapped in this bubble, you know, because it sometimes it's social, sometimes it becomes economic. It's also spiritual. You know, maybe all your family is in it. And it's really hard to break the mold, I think, for yourself, when you teach your children. I had one woman who I was teaching Cakes for the Queen of Heaven series, and at the break, she came to me in tears and said, you know, I know everything that's being taught here today is true, but it so hurts me because I know I can't go home and change anything unless I want to topple my world, you know, unless I want to lose my husband and, you know, lose so many of the things that are important to me, you know, I have to just keep playing this role. And I don't know, it feels like it's important to acknowledge that, you know?
No, it is, absolutely. And I think that following the example of Lilith in our lives can look a lot of different ways on the outside. I mean, I think you can, you know, you don't have to do something as dramatic as, you know, fleeing your whole life, but just to start to live as if your needs and wants were just as important as those around you. And it could be tiny baby steps of, you know, maybe if everyone's going to go out to eat and you always say, oh, wherever everyone else wants to go, maybe you throw your opinion in the hat and you go where you want to go that time. So I think it can seem like the Lilith story is so dramatic and she does, you know, topple her whole world and leave and go. But I think you can embody that in little ways by just refusing to sacrifice yourself in your everyday activities and everyday choices.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And if we stopped and thought about it, you know, there's so many ways. I mean, I'm thinking about a woman who didn't even, you know, sit at the table and eat with her family until, you know, everybody got their plate at the table. And, you know, she would always eat last and she would always get what was left, basically. And, you know, there's no point in doing that sort of stuff or sending that kind of message to your kids, you know, and not to mention how it makes the woman feel, too. It makes her feel like she's less than.
Absolutely. I mean, that example you gave, she literally got the leftovers, not just at the table, but in life. And she was, like you said, you can say, even if she were saying the right things to her kids, they're going to pick up on how she's living, how life plays out in her house. That's what they're going to pick up on. That's the message they're going to internalize and take with them and think, like you said, they're going to think that's what they deserve too.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, Monette, we're going to take a quick break here. We're about at the half hour, give or take. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about resources that maybe can be explored to learn more about Lilith. I want to learn, you know, what you think what lessons from Lilith we can use today. And, you know, fill listeners in a little bit more, you know, maybe on, you know, making this more practical, you know, take it out of the academic or the mythological, you know, maybe equate it to the Me Too movement, you know. So we'll do that when we get back. But for listeners, right now we're going to hear a word from Joe Carson. Here we go.
My Davy Uzume. Hello. Let me say a few things about Joe Carson's film, Dancing with Gaia, an exploration of Earth-based spirituality shot at sacred sites around the world. Here is what Drusilla Pettibone said on DearMist.com. I was truly touched and even awed by the film. I don't think I can comment on it adequately until I've had a chance to watch it a couple more times. I really appreciate that there is so much substantive information to digest. For example, the info about hinges and tracing the horizon line is all new to me and totally fascinating. The film was obviously very beautiful, and I was amazed how it was able to capture so many of the descriptions visually and seamlessly connect vintage footage with modern. I especially loved when images were dynamically superimposed on each other, like the lace with the water and the dancing in the flowering meadow. A visual feast and with so many layers. I am also so pleased to have been introduced to Monica Shu and her work. It's so important for pagans to become aware of our heritage. It seems easily lost among so many new books, and the film really brought me home in a new way. Dancing with Gaia is available at dancingwithgaia.com.
So you can get that film and a mini booklet, a mini book that comes with it, and that's all at dancingwithgaia.com by Joe Carson, dancingwithgaia.com. And just before we get back to Monette Chilson and in Lilith, because our schedule is changing this month, I just want to give you a heads up that the next show is going to be Friday, the 10th, and I'm going to be interviewing Nicholas Pearson. He's written a book called Crystal Basics. We're going to be talking about crystals and also stones of the goddess. I have my show on the 12th, Easter Sunday. It's actually an Easter special about balance and all things. I'll be sharing some inspiration from my book, Goddess Calling, as well as a meditation. Then on the 19th, Norman DeEllis is with me. She has a new book out, A Hieroglyphic Words of Power. We're going to be talking about hieroglyphs in magic, as using them in oracles and dreams. And finally, what I'm most excited about this month is on Saturday and Sunday, the 25th and the 26th, I'm going to have a doubleheader with Laura Perry. We're going to be talking about all aspects of trance and journeying and doing that kind of channeling work. On Saturday the 25th, we're going to sort of take it from the top. It's going to be the hidden depths of the human mind. And then on Sunday, we're going to be talking about trance and trance possession and the pagan spiritual practice. So we have some great stuff coming up later in the month. But like I said, it's usually going to be on a Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. So if you've been looking for us on Wednesday, that will not be the case, at least for April and into May. So let me turn my attention back to Monette Chilson, author of Original Resistance, Reclaiming Lilith, Reclaiming Ourselves. Tell me, about Lilith in terms of her relevance today. What dots do we need to connect?
I think we've been seeing Lilith kind of pop up on a cultural level with lots of the movements that are toppling the way things have been and the way things have been for a long time. The Me Too movement, time's up. Women literally saying, time's up, I'm done. We're not doing this anymore. So that's kind of the macro level. We see things like that, and the more we see them, it's kind of like you have to see something to be able to envision it in your own life. The more we see that, the more we will see that, because people have kind of a blueprint or a template. They've seen it done. They know it can be done. It's easier to have kind of like a rebelliousness in your own soul when you've seen it played out, and you've seen it not be shot down and actually make a change and change institutions. So there's that kind of on the big level. And I guess on a more personal level, I think we're kind of at a time now where we can be still and quiet and discern who we really are. And we don't often think of that still quiet with Lilith, because she's so bold and defiant. But I think that this is a good time to question. Sometimes when people say, where do I start in reclaiming Lilith? Well, you start where you are. And if you're asking that question, where do I start? You've really already started. And it's just looking at the things that underlie your life, that guide your decisions and shape who you are. And are they real and true to who you really are? Like, are you really, are you being yourself? Or are you being who others think you should be? And I just think this is a great opportunity right now to take the time, go inside, and look at some of that stuff. And that's a quiet, still practice that can lead you to reclaiming that strong, vibrant part of yourself that maybe you've lost sight of.
And obviously, I mean, the anthology, and let me give the title again. I love it. Original Resistance. As a social justice activist myself, I mean, this really speaks to me. You know, Original Resistance, Reclaiming Lilith, Reclaiming Ourselves. You know, I almost feel, Monette, and, you know, not that... Men don't have enough privilege in the society. I'm not saying that, but, my mantra lately, I've been on this kick for about a year, is that we have, all of us, men and women, we have normalized so much abuse and exploitation as workers in the workforce. It's everywhere. We've normalized it so much. You know, we say things to ourselves like, well, this is just the way things are, you know, to sort of rationalize it away. I almost feel like, Lilith can benefit men as well, too. I mean, is that going a little bit too far?
No, not at all. I mean, I think it kind of, recognizing Lilith and having her become a part of this equation again is a win-win for everybody. Because really it just allows the full personhood of women to come forth, which will make a more beautiful culture, more beautiful families, more beautiful relationships, because you'll be dealing with two full people instead of one who's trying to do what the other one wants her to do. I don't have the children's book in front of me right now, but I'll see if I can remember. I wrote a line in there about not wanting, this is Lilith talking in the book, saying not wanting someone who wants what's best for me all the time, but just someone to be a partner in life, something like that. I wish I had it because I wrote it more eloquently, but it's, I think it's refreshing for everyone to be in partnership rather than hierarchy, especially in interpersonal relationships.
Yeah, because someone always has someone over them, you know? You know, there's always this power over thing happening. I think even if you're a guy, and you know, I just had this idea. If we were going to write some commandments of Lilith, one of them would have to be thou shalt be no NDAs. You know, I loved it when Elizabeth Warren came out and said those non-disclosure agreements, these NDAs, are just a tool of evil people to be able to cover up their evil deeds, something like that. I mean, I'm badly paraphrasing, but that was the gist of it. And I can't imagine Lilith allowing NDAs.
You are absolutely right. Yep. Yep.
So obviously the anthology is a great place to start. You know, would you call it even a self-help guide? I mean, is that you know, would that be a good description for the you know, of the anthology?
I think it does help us with our sense of self, but it's not, if you're expecting a chapter on, you know, developing your voice and developing this and how to do this, it's not that. It is really quite a poetic collection. It's a pretty even mix between actual poetry, some very short, a few lines, some pages and pages. There's some art in there, but every piece is designed to awaken a part of you that maybe you had forgotten or you had been afraid to acknowledge. One thing we did do that makes it a little more accessible, and this is something that Trista as a Girl God hadn't done with other books, but I felt really strongly that I wanted people to be able to work through this in a more concise way than just reading it all and thinking about it. So I actually put together a curriculum where I do walk you through questions and ways you can integrate some of the learning. I take different pieces from it and group readings together and have you read that and answer questions. And ideally, I mean, you can do it yourself and just kind of process it, but really the magic I found is in doing it in community. And we've actually had Lilith circles, which is what I call this curriculum, springing up. I think Trista the other day sent me something. There's a Facebook group in some other state, I don't even remember, for Lilith circles. And I put the curriculum on my website. Right now it's free. We're just letting people use it, and we're thinking about incorporating that into a companion guide for people. But right now, you know, you can take it in your existing women's group or friend group. You can actually work through this in community, which is really beautiful, because sometimes very powerful, raw realizations come up and you've got people there then to process that with.
So where does one find that now again, Monette?
That is on my website. So that's at monettechilson.com.
Okay. And now tell me about My Name is Lilith. Is that the children's book that you've mentioned a couple times but we didn't talk a lot about?
The children's book that came out first. There's an artist that has illustrated several of the Girl God books, Arna Bart. She's brilliant. She's in Australia. And there's an illustration on every page of that book. And it really just unpacks the story in a really beautiful, simple way. So it's technically a children's book, but I will say that I often read it at the beginning of a talk. And, you know, it's a fairly short book because it really takes you right into that story and lets you understand the distortions that have happened between that story and then our understanding of femininity and its origins. And I was actually on a call, about a week ago with a group, the Revelation Project, and I was just kind of talking to their women's group, and they had asked me to do a meditation. I had written this one, you know, kind of what I thought I should say. And then we got to the end, and I said, you know, guys, I feel like I need to just read you the story, like read it to your inner child. And they loved that. I said, everyone, get your blankets, get comfy. We're going to have story time. And I read it, and it was just so lovely because so many of us didn't hear those messages when we were children. And it's not too late now to, like, reparent and tell ourselves new stories.
Absolutely. I love that. Yeah, I've seen the Girl Guide series, and it's an incredible series. I mean, if listeners have not looked into that yet, please do. And correct me if I'm wrong, Monette, you know, if they go directly to the Girl Guide series website and buy the books, I think, that's better than buying them on Amazon. Or are they even available on Amazon? I'm not even sure if I know anymore.
They are on Amazon, but yes, it's always preferable to buy them directly from thegirlgod.com. Yeah.
Okay. What other embodiments of the sacred feminine interest you? You know, from your perspective, you know, anything beyond Lilith I should have asked you this first. Do you come from a Judeo-Christian background?
I do. I come from a Christian background. I jokingly call myself a recovering Baptist. I grew up in South Texas, small Southern Baptist church. You know, it was just such an ironic thing because dancing was considered, you know, horrible and a sin. And my mom was a dance teacher, which is hilarious. And just there were so many inconsistencies. The things I would hear there, you know, I'd filter them into my brain, and they didn't mesh with, like, my soul. My soul was like, nope, that's not it. Nope, that's not it. So I spent a long time trying to reconcile that and trying to, like, kind of make it work. When I first started doing yoga, I kind of took the bent of, okay, I'm going to reconcile yoga with the spirituality I learned in the Baptist church, and I'm going to make it all work. And I would do things like, you know, read by, I was kind of teaching, I was teaching some yoga at the time. This was about 20, 25 years ago. I would pick a Bible verse and then do a pose that went with that. And it was just all about trying to make it work because that's just where I was right then at that point in my life. And then later on, I moved on and started just listening to that inner voice. And that's when I wrote my first book, which is Sophia Rising. And Sophia, of course, is just our inner wisdom. And I love how it's kind of like Lilith. Like, Sophia's kind of hidden in the Bible. You know, she's called in the translations we usually read, she's Lady Wisdom, which to me sounds like, you know, the fortune teller on Scooby-Doo or something. Lady Wisdom. And I just thought Sophia sounded so right to me, and like something that was inside me already, that knowing. And so Sophia ended up being a big part of that book. And that was my first way of talking about God in the feminine and calling God she and daring to do that. And I did a lot of work in that book because there was a lot of people I encountered that, you know, I'm from Texas, and in the Bible Belt, preachers still will say things from the pulpit about yoga being evil and don't open yourself up to this and, you know, be careful of that. And I was trying to help people reconcile that again. I kept trying to help them reconcile that. But in the process, I really took a critical look at the way women's stories were told in the Bible, if that's the text you're going from, you know, if you're using that as your springboard. And I did a really interesting linguistic analysis of the pronouns used in the Bible, because I would hear a lot of people say, oh, I don't have a problem with God as he. It's not a big deal. Like, it doesn't skew my perspective of me. And I have my master's in communications, and I've done a lot of work on deconstructing things. And I knew that if I really looked at the words in the Bible, it would tell a different story. And I don't have that book open in front of me, but I do remember when I looked at the he versus she and the mother versus father, and I did several different pronouns like that. And the most astounding was actually the possessive pronouns, the his and hers, which of course, you know, imply ownership of oneself. And I think that his was used 5,056 times and hers was used 47 times. So there you go. Like, you know,
yeah.
There's really no arguing with that. Yeah.
Why am I not surprised? You know, she only has possession of something those few times. And girlfriend, I don't know whether you've ever heard me refer to myself in my pre-goddess days, but I was a recovering Catholic from Louisiana, so we were neighbors.
Yeah.
So Monette, what about Mary Magdalene? Did she fit into this, this early journey for you, when you're finding the feminine face of God?
I did read a lot about Mary Magdalene. I think I've read three kind of novels about her that are kind of historical fiction, which are really beautiful because they're immersive. And it kind of puts you into the story. And I think she is definitely one of those women who's been maligned to serve the purposes of the culture and the religion. The church needed her to be the fallen woman. It did not serve their purpose for her to be Jesus's companion. And I mean, I'm most excited about a book that's coming out. I don't even know if it's technically about Mary Magdalene, but my favorite author of all time ever is Sue Monk Kidd. And she has a new book coming out called Belonging. And it's about Jesus's wife. I don't know if she based it on Mary Magdalene, but I am super excited about that. And since I brought up Sue Monk Kidd, I have to tell you one of the most exciting moments for me in the process of publishing Original Resistance was Sue Monk Kidd actually endorsed the book.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Incredible. Congratulations. That's wonderful. I have been trying to get her on the show for years, and I can never get past any of her publicists. That new book of hers, that's definitely going to be on my, bedside table as well.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
So, Monette, before we go, we're going through these challenging times right now. I mean, it's none of us know what's on the other side of the hill. Do you think, Lilith as a deity archetype or ideal, offers us any lessons, direction, that can help us through this?
I do. I think we were plunged into this, not by choice, but I think we can definitely make it a time to kind of incubate those parts of us, those tender parts that we didn't know what to do with before. And I think we can leave this time with a truer vision and maybe more on a path that's aligned with who we want to be, following that, that true next right thing for us instead of what we should do and what, you know, so-and-so expects us to do and what they expect us to do. It's kind of like, you know, we're a snow globe and we just got turned upside down. The whole world, we're all, you know, shaken up, and we have the gift of getting to realign when things settle. So we can realign, you know, more, be brave, more like Lilith, and do the right thing for us instead of the thing we should do. And I don't know how we're doing on time, but I had thought one of the things I've done in this little, you know, respite we've had, I listened to a meditation by Elizabeth Gilbert the other day, and she suggested writing a love letter to yourself. And although we don't always think of Lilith as like the soft love letter type, I think if you sit down and write a love letter to yourself, it enables you to connect, reconnect, remember that true self, that Lilith self that may have been eclipsed by the shoulds and the have-tos that we don't have right now. So I thought if we could maybe end and I could just read my little love letter that I wrote to myself and maybe inspire someone to sit down and write one to themselves.
Sure. I think that's a wonderful way to close the show. And we still have a bit of time, so you don't have to worry that, you know, we're going to get cut off. And, you know, I just want to say I really like that advice, especially, you know, we forget that the election is coming up in November as well. And, you know, I know a lot of, you know, I'm everybody who listens to my show knows I'm a Bernie supporter, and I've been feeling like, you know, the Democratic Party wants us to sort of throw our idealism and what we really want for ourselves out the window and settle for, you know, good old Papa Joe. And I don't know, I'm not sure, you know, the Lilith in us would tell us to settle. But anyway, that's just, that's just my politics.
Well, for sure, Lilith would never tell us to settle. That she would tell us to be true to ourselves. That's like the overarching message. You know, regardless of what the fallout is, be true to yourself.
Okay. Well, let's hear your love letter, Monette.
All right. You are wise. Everything you need to make decisions is inside you. Stop looking for approval, permission, and blessings outside yourself. You are enough. You do enough. You have enough. Stop striving and rest in my knowing and let it penetrate the fears and become your own. For this is your birthright. It does not need to be won or earned. It simply is. Trust yourself. Trust me. Divinity flows through you when you stop fighting the current. You are loved. You are held. Breathe deeply and inhale your belovedness. It is here always. Remember it. Reclaim it. Follow it, for it will lead you back to me.
Blessed be. Blessed be. That is so powerful. I have to tell you, it brought tears to my eyes. It's lovely. You know, I hope you publish that somewhere. It feels like it could be, a rallying cry for every woman out there.
Oh, thank you, Karen.
Well, that about does it for us, Monette. But if there was any last words you want to say to listeners, before we part tonight, please feel free, even if it's just to mention your websites.
Visit me on my website, MonetteChilson.com and TheGirlGod.com. Take this time, tune into yourself, listen, trust, and don't be afraid to act on the new information that you get in this quiet.
sounds like a plan. And I hope listeners out there will take the link from this show and share it around their Facebook pages and all of their groups, their women friends and their woke men friends, and we have to be here for each other, like we're hearing today on the news. And I think reclaiming Lilith and reclaiming ourselves is a way to do that. Thank you, Monette. Thank you so much for the anthology and for your time today. And please do stay in touch.
I will, definitely. Thank you, Karen.
Oh, thank you, too. Thank you so very much. Okay, listeners, that about does it for us today. It's about time for me to go watch The Walking Dead, and unfortunately Outlander is not on today. Boo-hoo, hiss. If you're an Outlander fan, I can't believe Roger. Did he really die, or are they tricking us? I mean, it just doesn't make sense because Roger lives on in the books. So anyway, my big concern is Roger really dead or alive? So anyway, that about does it for me today. As I said at the top of the show, please don't be afraid. We have nothing to be afraid of. This is all going to work out. And I am happy to hear from you. If anyone wants to get in touch with me, it's KarenTate108@yahoo.com. You can also write me through my website, KarenTate.net. I am open to show ideas and guest ideas. You guys out there, guys and gals, are the gas in my tank. So I appreciate hearing from you, especially now, as several of you have written to me saying that the show is keeping you sane. I get that. I'm tired of watching virus stuff on television as well. So there's years of interviews here in the archives. They're still so very relevant. We're not where we need to be yet. So all that wisdom is still there, showing us a path forward. All right. So next time I will be on the air this month. Again, just a reminder, is Friday. Friday, then next Sunday. But you don't have to remember this kind of stuff. If you go to the follow button on the show page, click that button, and you will get a reminder in your email inbox of the next show that's coming up. And that's really the easiest way to do it. All right. Well, good night, and have a wonderful week. And Monette, again, thank you so much for your time and your wisdom.
Oh, it was a pleasure.
All right, then. Good night, and until we meet again, may Isis embrace you in her golden wings.